Are you suffering from back pain? Well, I've got the thing just for you. 15 surefire tips for relieving back pain, plus 192 others just in case, volume 1, available at Amazon.com. Over 30 million Americans are suffering with back pain at this very moment. The vast majority of these cases are either caused or exacerbated by common lifestyle factors. Many of the same factors may be causing you pain right now. Join board-certified physician Andrew Kirshner as he guides you through the parts of your life where these problems occur and gives you simple, safe, and effective solutions for these common daily pitfalls. In this fun and informative book, you will learn how to identify the aspects of your life which may be causing you pain, how to create a back-friendly environment, how you can improve your pain by improving your sleep, ways to make a pain-free commute, how you can perform daily activities without making your pain worse, and much more. Andrew Kirshner is so well respected in the field of back pain relief. He has, you know, famous clients such as DJ Jazzy Jeff. He has done many talks and lectures at universities in the UK. He has appeared on QVC demonstrating back pain relief products, and that is because he is an expert in his field and people trust him. Also, check out the 5-star reviews on Amazon.com. This is the book that you need if you suffer from back pain. That's 15 surefire tips for relieving back pain, plus 192 others just in case, volume 1, available at Amazon.com in paperback. Check the link below the show for more information. Hello kids, welcome to another episode of Turn Chuckle on BBG Wrestling. I am Pablo and I want to thank you for tuning in and for being a long time listener if you have been so far, and to any new listeners as well. Hello! I'm terrible at that kind of thing. Feedback always appreciated. Please feel free to get in touch on Instagram by contacting Turnchuckle, which is my page where I post loads of rare wrestling memorabilia from a collection. It's proper self-congratulatory wankery, basically. And you can also find Grapple Arcade on Twitter as well. So yes, we are going to get back together to start doing these shows, myself and Foxy, and do check out all the other shows on the BBG network, because there's some amazing stuff covering new stuff, really in-depth interviews, you know, lots of analysis, all that kind of good stuff. And today's guest is the one and only Jameson Winger. Yes, what a nice dude. He really appreciated the fact that, like, I'm a big fan of that time period, and I love Jameson. You know, he's a bit niche, but anyone who worked with Bobby Heenan on such a regular occurrence is always good in my book. So he has an amazing story to tell as well. We talk about his beginnings all through his WWF run, his work as a stand-up comedian, how Vince McMahon discovered him, his son working for WWE on pay-per-view, and many, many really fun stories from that time. I think that's pretty much it. I'm gonna shut up so you can enjoy this immensely entertaining interview with the one and only Jameson Winger. And I'm gonna make a fool out of myself by trying to pronounce your name, even though your son gave me your name. It's D-O-D.
That's pretty good.
Okay, but
it's not that.
Oh, okay.
It's like spelled.
But as Lord Alfred Hayes said, he is the head air traffic controller at New York's LaGuardia Airport. It's our mate, Bloody Jameson. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm awesome. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you for being on the show. See, Royal Rumble 92 is probably what most people remember you from, because we didn't get...
Now, maybe this will help.
Okay.
Any better? Do I look a little bit more like...
That's awesome. Rollover 92 is probably what most people remember you from internationally, because we didn't get primetime over here as regularly. Sky Sports happened around about late 80s, and we started to get, you know, pay-per-view events as, you know, time went on, and TV shows and stuff like that. But Royal Rumble 92, managing the Bushwhackers, and, some of my favourite commentary of all time with Bobby Heenan. You know, Jameson was such an easy target for someone like Bobby Heenan, but, you know, the character played it so well. And, you know, you got your comeuppance on Jameson, kicked him in the shin, and, you know, do you still have the mortarboard, or was that something that you couldn't keep?
I couldn't keep it.
Oh, no. am I the first person to ask that? Because if I am, I'm quite proud of
it. Yes, you are. You definitely are.
Okay, excellent. You're from the New York area?
Yes, right outside New York City.
Did you watch wrestling as a child then, WWF?
I did, but like it goes way back. The first time I had like a favorite wrestler, it was Mil Mascaris, and I'm sure only your much older fans remember him. But one of the things that kind of led me away from wrestling was that it was just so predictable. The outcomes were so predictable. And I was a true sports fan. So I kind of got away from it, but I got caught up in it again when Vince took over, and all the Cyndi Lauper, Captain Lou Albano, when it hit MTV, and you couldn't escape it. So I definitely had an idea of what was going on at all times. I didn't order pay-per-view events, but I kind of kept one eye open toward it.
So when you were watching it and you were watching guys like Mil Mascaris, did you kind of view it more as a sport? Because I can understand that when, say, Bruno Sammartino, etc., it was the Italian population that really supported Bruno, and he was their hero kind of thing.
Right, yeah. You know, the thing about Mil was he was a true, what do they call that? Amateur wrestling stylist.
Okay.
In terms of, you know, fireman's carries and I wrestled and freestyle wrestling, and I could really relate to his style of wrestling because it wasn't so much throwing punches but it was the actual takedowns and figure fours and things like that. And it kind of, I liked what he brought into the ring.
Cool. So did you get to see many shows at the Garden?
I didn't. I saw a SummerSlam one year. I don't remember what year that was. But I didn't. I wasn't that big a fan. I was going to Ranger hockey games and Yankee baseball games. And that was more growing up where my interest was.
Mm-hmm. So were you more interested in sports growing up, or was it acting at an early age?
No, I got into acting very late in life. I mean, really, Jameson was maybe my second acting job.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And I did it prior to in a show, one of these murder mystery audience participation shows. And Vince happened to be at a show one night. And, you know, I recognized him, of course, and just had a killer show that night. And he was... I could just tell he was really enjoying it, and, you know, I got him cracking up so many times because, you know, there's no fourth wall. The audience is part of the show, so you get to interact with them at different points of the show, and he was just beat red from laughing. And I said, wouldn't it be great if he calls me and says, hey, come work for me? And within a couple of days of the show, that's exactly what happened.
Did Vince have that laugh that you hear on commentary? The chesty, you know?
Not really. In fact, he was a little bit not standoffish, but reserved in not wanting to make the night about him or anything like that. He was very respectful in that way. But, you know, you've seen him in the ring. You see how bright red his face gets.
Yeah.
That's what he looked like. He was bright red from just, I know I had a really killer show that night. I was on.
Mm-hmm. So what?
On my game, so to speak.
Cool. So what was the character that you were playing? Was it Jameson-esque or?
It was exactly Jameson. Okay. It was, you know, a character that I didn't think I kind of fell into the part. Very reluctant to do it because I just started out acting, and they had written a smaller part for me that had smaller scripted scenes and bigger on the improv. And when it turned out, they had to write that character out of the show for financial reasons. The only character left to play in that show was Jameson. And I was like, guys, you know, you need an act. And they were like, nah, you could do this. You could do this. And I put a pair of glasses on. I crossed my eyes and I was Jameson. And when Vince was very specific about me coming to the studio, that was a Saturday night I met him. Monday he called the producers and said, how do we get in touch with Jameson? And he asked me to come in. He said, come as Jameson. Come to the front desk as Jameson. You know, wait. And we said, I want to introduce you to Bobby. Don't break character. I want to see where it goes. I want to see if, you know, how far, how long it takes him to realize that we're putting him on. And it was great. We really went at it, you know, really exchanged. And I, you know, it was great. Jameson, one great thing about Jameson was, as afraid as he was of everyone and everything, he had a temper.
Yes.
And it really worked with Bobby because he would back me down and then all of a sudden I'd lash out and and that's how it went. And it was, you know, it sounds very corny and hokey, but from day one, from that moment on, it was like magic when we would get into it together. And he's such a great guy off screen. We cracked each, and I broke him so many times where they had to reshoot stuff. It was really good. And he was very complimentary to me about how much he enjoyed working with somebody that could hold their own with him. And that was pretty much how things went for 3 years.
So was there any immediate, I don't know, maybe negativity that you were sort of someone brought in from the outside of the wrestling world sort of thing? Were there anyone who were like sort of on guard or, you know, trying to maintain the era of, the aura, I should say, of Mystique or kayfabe?
Yeah, you know, there was a, you know, I know like a lot of what I've been hearing this week with all these Facebook fans suddenly appearing from nowhere. I went from 400 Facebook friends 10 days ago to like I have almost 1,000. Something happened and all this. And I'm hearing old school a lot. And when I was at the WWF in those days, old school was Pat Patterson,
yeah,
and George Steele. And I mean, not just as wrestlers, but people that now work for Vince.
Yeah, Jay Strongbow and yeah.
You know, that were had Vince's ear. And
yeah.
And you know, I'm not singling anyone out, even though I mentioned those two names, only one of them represented a group that of old school that didn't really see a place for Jameson in the WWF. Mm-hmm. And Vince was such a huge supporter of mine that I think he really kept those guys at bay and said, nah, you got to give this guy a chance. He's fun. You know, and they kept renewing my contract. But there came a time when Primetime was canceled.
Yeah.
And it they went to Raw.
Yeah.
Everything that Raw did was shot at arenas, was shot on the road. There was no more studio show.
Yeah.
Jameson was a studio show character, I think. And I was not really good with going on the road. Now I was totally engulfed by the wrestling life. I wasn't an actor anymore. I was part of a road show of wrestlers. And, you know, they tried it for a while with me managing the Bushwhackers, but I really think I did my best work for them on primetime, where I was a plant in the audience and, you know, I could interact with the wrestlers in a magazine show setting.
Yeah.
With a studio audience instead of in a wrestling ring, or at a wrestling match. It was just, I could actually see why some old school said, yeah, Jameson's not really the guy. So I was, and I was also not wanting to travel. I was, you know, I had a budding acting career, and the great thing about primetime was I only had to work once every 3 weeks, one day every 3 weeks. We'd shoot a whole bunch of shows in one day, and then I could go do commercials or film or whatever else I was auditioning for. But when Raw started, it was just constantly flying around the country, and I was not, especially with, you know, the negativity that I was privy to at times. It just was. So when I left there, and believe me when I tell you, I left on great terms with Vince. There was a lot of mutual respect. It was, you know, a very comfortable parting of the ways. You know, he shook my hand and handed me a check. He was really, really good to me. So I kind of left there and got myself involved in my acting career, and didn't ever really recognize or appreciate, shame on me, how much support I had from wrestling fans. And, you know, I literally went almost 20 years before I realized that there were people looking for me in the wrestling community for where did you go? Nobody knew the actor that played Jameson. I never really took credit for it. I wasn't ashamed of it. I was very proud of the work that I did there, especially in the primetime days. But I never got cast as a nerd in anything else. I was always the tough guy. You know, I was in pretty good shape. I was pretty cut in those days, and I was always getting roles as, like, you know, mafia or Spanish gangs or, you know, a wife beater or something. I was a mean looking guy with no shirt on, and that's the roles that I was getting. Besides doing some stand up and all that. It's funny, I never ever did got another job as a nerd. I forget where this was all leading to or leading from. You know, answering your question, there was definitely division among the execs in terms of what do we do with Jameson. And Vince was just, he was the best. I mean, I know people, you know, he have their negative stories about Vince and all that. And so anyway, okay. So, next question.
Well, there's a lot to ask just coming off from that. So you were actually offered to be a part of Monday Night Raw, or?
I was. They wanted it. Vince was very, you know, he was adamant about finding a place for me. And it just, you know, the logical choice were the Bushwhackers because I was nutty and they were nuttier.
Yeah. So did you do more shows with the Bushwhackers except Royal Rumble 92? Did you go on the road with them and do house shows and stuff?
Yeah. We did a year at least of that. I did a lot of road shows, and those were – a lot of those, you know, were building toward the showdown with the Beverly Brothers at the Royal Rumble. It was a – yeah. It was a setup each week, and you know, to where I got in trouble with the Genius, and
yeah, Well, the Bushwhackers, because that is particularly, 92, 93 in particular, are 2 years that I love. And the Bushwhackers continued to have matches with the Beverly Brothers even after Jameson had left.
Right.
And they had teamed up with Tiger Jackson, the little midget wrestler, and the Beverly Brothers teamed up with Little Louie. So I can totally imagine Jameson getting involved with the midgets as well. I think that would have been hilarious.
Oh, God. I wanted to fight somebody. I thought it'd be really funny if they'd had me fight a girl or somebody. And, I had my own ideas. You know, it's funny, like, now that all of this is happening, where suddenly there's all these Facebook friends, and I have so much footage that I shot with a friend of, like, Jameson at the gym. Jameson, I got to find those tapes, because I'm telling you, some of this stuff is funnier than anything I ever did on WWF. And I think that people would appreciate it, because it's me 25 years ago. Looking like Jameson and not like I look now.
But that would be absolutely gold. And
I gotta find them. There's gotta be, you know, at least 10-20 minutes of solid funny stuff that Jameson in different situations that but they were always, you know, it was weird. It was on the one hand, Vince gave me so much latitude to just run with the character, and then on the other hand, anything I presented to, like, the writing team or anything, that, you know, never came about. And I'm telling you, some of this stuff is hilarious.
So what did Vince compare the character to anyone in particular, like, say, an Andy Kaufman or maybe Woody Allen, or, you know, in this country, I don't know if you know Mr. Bean, you know, it's very...
Oh, my God. Yeah. I think about him all. I love, huge fan.
Yeah.
And I would say that was, you know, if I had to compare Jameson to somebody, Jameson would work in any of those same situations. Yeah. He's done. I'm a huge fan. The Blackadder is one of my most favorite. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I just think that's brilliant television. I wrote a lot too. I wrote a play that went off Broadway, and I won a couple of one act festivals with my writing. So I have a real appreciation for. I know he wrote most of his own stuff, but I see that the similarities there. I used to get, I don't know if you know, this guy's old, Jerry Lewis, was an American comedian, very popular. He first teamed up with Dean Martin. I'm talking now 40s, 50s.
So we're not talking Jerry Lee Lewis.
Not Jerry Lee Lewis. Okay. Jerry Lewis, who is a really funny comedian. And I got a lot of comparisons to him, mm-hmm. And his comedy. And I was inspired by him. I mean, I'm sure that watching him as a kid, you know, helped me form late Jameson. Although Jameson, I never really thought much about the character. I just did it. You know what I mean? There was no preparation. No, I just winged it. And maybe that's why they called him Winger.
Yeah. It seems like a crazy thing that Jameson had a surname. You know, a lot of people probably forget that as well. So where is that where Winger maybe came from? That was an idea from...
I never asked them, because when the show that Vince saw me in, I had a different last name, but I got my start. I don't know if you know this, but the very first time I appeared on the WWF was on a show called, was on the Bobby Heenan show.
The Bobby Heenan show, yeah.
Right. And in that show, they introduced me as... Oh, you must know, because you introduced me as the math scientist.
Absolutely.
But that's the first time I even heard my last name, Winger. Was going to be Winger.
Was there any – what I heard about the Bobby Heenan show was that it was going to continue, but apparently the USA Network said, well, we need 2 hours of wrestling, and this isn't wrestling, so that's why it was canceled after 4 episodes.
I think that's a nice way of putting it.
Okay.
The way you just explained, I think they just hated the show. The execs at USA. And, you know, we were having a blast. Everybody thought it was going to be a hit. Everybody was kind of like surprised that we were going to. And then they just threw me into primetime as an audience plant after that, and I was having more fun.
Well, you know, you wonder why Jameson, or your Facebook profile in particular, has had lots of friend requests, but you may not realize that the Jameson footage appears on DVDs. Jameson's on the network, etc. So, you know, Jameson very much out there, and, you know, is the talk of many podcasts. And
it's just amazing to me, because somebody once sent me footage of a match where somebody in the background was holding a sign that said "Bring back Jameson," I was like, you know, kind of oblivious to what was going on when I left there, because I was so embroiled in my career. I was writing and I was acting, and it's so funny. I kind of left the business to have a family. So I kind of, right around 2000, I shut it down. And
this is your theater company, yeah?
Yeah, no, I don't mean my theater company. I mean my acting career. I couldn't get a mortgage, because as an actor, you know, if I probably could have gotten a mortgage in my WWF days, because I had a contract. But actors, it's very hard. You can make $100,000 one year and $20,000 the next. And banks were not like good with that. They didn't want, you know, the big curves up and down, you know. They wanted a steady income. So I realized that I had to get a real job. If I was going to buy a house, I thought I'd take a break from acting, get a real job, buy a house, pop out a couple kids, and then get back to acting. And I had a job. I was running a bar in New York City. I was a general manager. And I used to book comedy shows, stand-up comedians and musicians, bands, and at this place. It was a great spot in Manhattan. And the comedians there knew me from Jameson. They were like, oh, my God, we were big fans of yours. And one of them said, can we put Jameson's picture on our website and our poster and say that special appearance by Jameson, the WWF?
Okay.
And I said, yeah, I don't care. You know, go ahead. I mean, you're not going to get anybody here. Well, the New England Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame happened to somehow see that picture, called the bar, and said, and a sports writer from Poughkeepsie, which is upstate New York State, saw it, and he called, said he wanted to do a feature, and they were both, and New England Hall of Fame wanted to give me an award, and I was like, you guys, I thought it was a joke. I guess you got to be kidding me. And they both, it sounded like the same person, because they were both saying the same things, that people have been searching for you on the internet for years. They all thought Andy Kindler, who was an American actor on a popular sitcom, was Jameson. Nobody knows who played Jameson. And this is, mind you, 20 years after I left the WWF. And when I got honored by the Hall of Fame, and this guy did a four-part series on Jameson, the actor, and John, the man behind the actor, they said, you should join Facebook, because you got a lot of wrestling fans out there that would want to. So I did. I went on Facebook. I didn't use my name. I used my wrestling name. And I got about 200 to 300 people as fans that have become friends, and that's the way it's been for 5 years. And then I'm telling you, 10 days ago, I've gotten 600 or 700 friend requests, because somebody posted some, I don't know, but it's snowballed, and now
it's great. It just takes one thing to maybe go viral on YouTube or.
It's crazy.
But I'm just going to say, I got in there well before everyone else. You know,
yes, you did.
I did you a long time ago, because I'm a big fan. So, you know. you know, I'm just going to take all the credit for that. But
yes, yeah, absolutely.
A couple of questions from that, and if you don't want to go into this, it's completely you know, fine.
But I'm just, good. I'm good.
Just curiosity, really. So, with you being a non-wrestling personality, were you officially an employee instead of an independent contractor? So, did you get all the?
No, I had a merchandise contract that I really never came to fruition because I left at a time where I was just getting involved with Hasbro and
could there have been a Hasbro figure?
I would have been. Yes.
Oh, that's mind blowing. See, I'm a collector as well, so that would have been.
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of, you know, I had a meeting with Hasbro and I had to get an agent at that point because it was going to start getting serious. And it's crazy. I just wasn't, you know, I was in such, I was so put off by the travel and I wasn't a happy guy then, happy enough there to want to stay. And you know, I don't know that I would have, they would have wanted me to stay. There was, like I said, there was a movement to say, you know, where there was so, WWF was in so much turmoil at that time. They were going through the steroid thing.
Yeah.
The Playboy expose about the sexual harassment. There was so, Vince was being pulled in so many different directions. And I really got the feeling that my days were going to come to an end anyway. And I went to Vince like a gentleman, and he was a gentleman. I said, Vince, let's just put this out of its misery. Let me go be an actor and you take care of business. Because everybody, that was at the same time that everybody went to the WCW.
Yeah.
And I got an offer from the WCW. Uh-huh. And I was like, "Nah, I'm gonna cut it right here where everybody else is leaving, I'm out."
So, did that period, that '92, the scandals and everything, did that affect you personally? Were you getting stopped on the streets or et cetera for that particular reason?
You know, I had my brushes with it, but you know. I mean, I obviously wasn't taking steroids, so
no.
You know, I wasn't like a part of that.
No,
I would joke that you know, I'm on hemorrhoids.
But a lot of personalities were getting questioned by the news, et cetera, and you know, they just wanted to dig any dirt they could find. And
right, well, no, nobody was really approaching me. I mean, it's so funny that nobody knew who I was when I wasn't in character.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't wear a mask or I just would wash my hair and and stand up straight.
Uh-huh.
And I'm telling you, wrestlers that I worked with didn't recognize me in the dressing room. Or, what? You know, they would be like, "Wait, that's James? That's the guy who just..." So I think everybody thought I was part of the crew. In those events, because that's who I hung out with anyway. I hung out more with the crew than I did with the wrestlers. It was just, we were on different planets in those days, you know.
So what did you put in your hair at the time to make it like
just that? Like a ton of hair gel.
Okay.
The cheapest dollar store hair gel I could get my hands on.
It really helped with the overall presentation. So do you? I don't know. Is there a Jameson trademark or copyright? Do you own it? Can you portray the character if you know?
Oh, I can do it. What happens with that is when you're under contract, they take over ownership of the character.
Okay.
When you're released from contract, you can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really good about, if I wanted to go do a show, even when I was under contract, they let me do it. They weren't looking for a piece of the action. You know, it was pennies to them.
Yeah.
So it was good. They just don't want you to embarrass the you know, the name.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's kind of a weird situation that you were in where you could like actually play a completely different characters outside of the WWF at the same time, whereas no one else could do that. So very interesting situation to be in, I guess. When you talk about when you first came in and sort of those old school guys like Pat Patterson, etc. Well, it doesn't get more old school than Gorilla Monsoon. And he was a big part of Primetime. So how was Gorilla? Because if there were, the list of people that I would love to meet, and obviously, sadly, can't do that, but I would love to have met Gorilla Monsoon.
He was just a great guy, and he was one of those old school guys that could really appreciate what I brought to a telecast, because, you know, he had, you know, he was under a lot of pressure to, he was paired up with Bobby so much.
Yeah.
And he had to improv with Bobby. And he knew how hard that was and how challenging and intimidating that could be. And he would always say to me, boy, you do that with such ease. You really, he was very, very complimentary to me. He always made me feel like he respected what I was able to do, because not many people can make Bobby laugh in the middle of one of his, you know, and there were so many times I broke Bobby up. It was pretty cool.
Uh-huh. Oh, well, it's kind of weird. You could tell that Bobby Heenan brought out the best in Gorilla, because when you look at the start of primetime, Gorilla was maybe a little wooden, and, you know, he was transitioning from, you know, he was still doing commentary, but that's play by play. That's different than being a personality, I guess. But if you look as primetime went on, just it's the classic pairing of all time, really. You
know? All time. Bobby was the best. I would say this unequivocally. Bobby was the best thing that ever happened to Vince McMahon. Bigger than Hulk Hogan, bigger than anybody there, because he sold the product. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have the best wrestling matches, but if you don't have somebody there to stir things up and to commentate, and he was without a doubt the most talented personality that they had, I think.
Oh, yeah, and you know, he produced interviews as well for the wrestlers.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So did – go for it.
He was the one that would go up to guys that were less – that were becoming stars that weren't so good in interviews. He was so good with them, like, you know, getting them ready to go before the camera started rolling. He was just such a pro. You know, he could have made a mark in Hollywood, I think. And I don't think I could say that about too many people that I worked with at the WWF. He could have, you know, if he chose that life, he could have been a Hollywood star.
Oh, absolutely. And it's so obviously, you know, he's doing okay, but it's so sad to see what's happened with Bobby. I'm so, you know, Bobby was in the country last week, and I missed the chance to go and see him. And I'll be going out to the States in September, actually, as well. So I'm keeping an eye out for any convention, because Bobby does all the conventions still.
He's great.
Yeah. His books are amazing as well.
Yeah.
Oh, have you read the books?
I did. You know, he gave me an autographed copy of both. It's just two, right?
It's two. I love the second one because it's like a self-help guide, but written from the point of view of Bobby Heenan instead of, you know, Ray Heenan, and it's just completely underhanded, you know, what I would do if I was in that position. It's such a good book. I love it.
But we didn't see each other for 20 years, and unfortunately, when the next time I saw him after working with him, he was already, you know, in his chair, and but we had a really nice chat, and his wife is great, and I think about him a lot.
Yeah. He deserves every accolade that he gets as well. He's the greatest manager of all time. He's one of the greatest wrestlers as well. People don't like realize how good Bobby Heenan was as a wrestler.
Right.
I was talking to someone who you may remember, Tom Buchanan, who was the photographer there for many years. I don't know. You may remember him.
What's his last name?
Tom Buchanan.
It sounds so familiar. I probably would recognize him.
Because I interviewed him recently, and I was asking him about Primetime and the Bobby Heenan show, and he says that he remembers you struggling to hold it in and then losing it immediately after a cut, but you never lost it during a segment.
Yeah.
Which says a lot.
Yeah, you know. I had such perfect training to step into that because, like I said, I was doing these shows that were there was so much improv, and I knew how to set him up. I knew how to act when he set me up. It was really a lot of fun. It was a great time, and I wish I appreciated the fans then the way I appreciate them now. That I had a better understanding of how many people out there really knew who Jameson was.
Mm-hmm. Well, it would have been, I guess, hard to really know because it was pre-internet, and ever since WWE have started the whole Legends line, yeah, you know, with the action figures and the DVDs, you, yeah, know, and it's not just bringing back memories for, you know, fans like me or fans who are older than me, but it's introducing a whole new audience. You know, Jameson would go down so well in, you know, the more PG era that's going on at the moment as well. You know, Jameson would be a great fit, and there would be so many opportunities. I always thought that Jameson should have fell in love with one of the Rosati sisters.
that could have been
a great TV wedding event. Yeah. So how are the Rosati sisters? Did you get to work with them a lot, or was it because I know they
did. I mean, besides the Bobby Heenan show, then they were also planted in the audience.
They were,
during prime time. So I saw a lot of them. They were great. They were really great to be around. They were a lot of fun and good sports, and we had a fun time.
Absolutely. Well, I didn't tell you this, but I'm trying. I messaged Vivian Rosati, and I was going to try and have some kind of reunion. She hasn't messaged back, and I know she's been in ill health recently as well, and obviously hope that she's doing okay. But I would love to get you both together on a show.
Yeah, that'd be cool. We're actually Facebook friends. We've been for a while.
Yes. That's the thing. I was like, I guess how people have thought about Jameson. Oh, I wonder where Jameson is now. I was like, I wonder where the Rosati sisters are. And Vivian is on Facebook. And I would love to chat to her because she's seems awesome.
She's great.
I hope everyone's enjoying my interview with Jameson. I'll be back in a jiffy.
Meet Barry. He wanted to get a website for his removal business. He searched online, met a number of web companies, ended up with too many options to take on board. Then he hired a web company. The company built a website, but there were many corrections. The company did not understand Barry's business. Barry then found Planet John. His website was designed and built on 1 week's time. The site comes with free maintenance and works on laptops and smartphones. We even told the World Wide Web about Barry's business at no extra cost. What are you waiting for? Contact us, www.pltjohn.com.
And now, back to the show. With the prime times, I'm guessing the original in the studio with Gorilla and Bobby is your favorite one, or did you prefer the studio audience when Vince took over?
Yeah, no, I like the studio audience. I mean, that's how when they went to, at some point, are you seeing all that going across the screen? Those messages?
I'm not, no.
No? Okay, good.
is it incriminating stuff?
No, it's like these freaking calls my son is getting.
Oh, okay. He's a popular man, yeah.
He really is. It's good for him. He's a good boy. He's a nice kid.
Yeah.
I forget now. I think there was when they canceled the Bobby Heenan show. There may have been like a break for me.
Okay.
Before they brought me into primetime, because my recollection is, when they brought me into primetime, I was right in the audience. That's how they kind of introduced me, and it was great. It was good times. Everybody, all the bad guys beat me up. All the good guys saved me every episode, it seemed, and it was. I had a lot of funny times.
Mm-hmm. One episode that I got asked about, which I haven't seen, shamefully, is, and I hope this is right, because if it isn't, someone has set me up to ask you about this, but where the berserker threw you off the roof? I'm going to have to find this, because it isn't on the network.
That's television magic. It was great. And you want to talk about a time where Vince, and you could see that, was it Vince? But you could definitely see Bobby breaking. Cracking him up, and I crack up at one point, and it's just really funny because it's all improv, and it's probably my favorite moment ever on the WWF was that episode of Primetime, was when the Berserker, and what was really cool about it was they made it a continuing story. They brought me back the next week on a hospital bed with a nurse, and It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. It gave me so much material, you know, episodes like that. Well, and there was another good one with when I got the $1 million belt stuck and I had it on for the whole show. And, you know, Sherry and Ted DiBiase are freaking out. Somebody stole the belt. And at the end of the episode, they go through the audience with a metal detector, find its mate. And Sherry beats the piss out of me. I loved her.
Sherry's another person who I wish I could have. Yeah.
She was probably my best friend on the talent end.
Oh, really?
Over the few years I was there, she was great. She was a good friend.
I can imagine that, just heart of gold, but also as a friend, fiercely defensive of, you know, she will stick up for friends and...
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of the impression I get from her, just, you know.
Yeah. For me, it was more like either I was the male version of her. I'm talking about off screen. Either I was the male version of her, or she was the female version of me. We were very similar in the way we thought about life and the way things that we valued, and two potheads, and you know, where everybody else was drinking and doing coke when we were sneaking off to smoke a joint, you know.
That's the point. You were probably never tested as a non-wrestler.
I was not. In fact, so funny, they had all the talent come to this room. Uh-huh. We were on the road, and there was another crew out on the road. But we were, you know, like other wrestlers at different parts of the country. But this was the one that the TV, they called it TV. The TV group was out. They came there first, and they tested. They brought everybody into the room to talk about testing. And everybody was there. That was Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, you know, all the big names that time were out doing TV.
Yeah.
When I walked into the room, everybody's like, what the fuck are you doing here? You know, get out of here. You don't got to be here. But yeah, it was, although, you know, I think I did have to give a urine sample. I'm pretty sure I did.
Everybody did.
Everybody did. And I think they tested for more than just steroids.
Yes. Well, the testing that I heard of was where you had to strip naked and there would be someone literally watching you, you know, pee from like...
That was probably a little bit later on when things started getting really heavy, because I think it was all a simple urine test with the first round.
I can imagine some of those urine tests may have came back with some of the wrestlers being pregnant.
Yeah, right.
Well, post-WWE or post-WWF, so you set up was your production company already going at that point? No.
I mean, I was just auditioning and doing some film. I did some really good films that really made some, you know, real hits at film festivals and...
Yeah.
And which those same films from the 90s, we're now producing as feature films and now trying to get as a series. So we're talking to Netflix, and so that's going to be the last quarter of my life is producing. My son, 12 years old, God bless him, is all over TV right now and movies. And I don't know if you saw the movie Brooklyn.
No, I haven't. No.
But you heard about it. My son was the little boy in that film and just tore it up. I mean, he stole the scenes he was in, and that led him to his current acting job on Kevin Can Wait with Kevin James. I don't know if you know who that is.
Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
And he's on a Disney show. So that's my life now, is producing and making sure he's where he has to be. But yeah, as soon as I left, I started writing, and I wrote a play that went off Broadway, which is kind of big, you know, to get a play.
Absolutely,
off Broadway is pretty special. And so I had some success there, and I did those films, did a couple commercials, reached a point where I was able to support myself. I was making a living, but, you know, I wanted to be a dad and change gears.
Mm-hmm. So, as well, going back a little bit, the WCW thing, you turned it down, I'm guessing, because if you didn't want to be on the road as well. The same.
Yeah,
situation.
I was kind of done. I think I was a Vince guy in the fact that...
It would have been weird, you know, to see Jameson on WCW television, I think.
Yeah, but, you know, it was kind of weird seeing Bobby and some of those other people.
This is very true, yeah.
You know, I think what is more weird seeing some of them, and I was not, you know, I didn't have any, there was no pull from me in terms of career advancement or anything. I certainly, you know, felt very loyal and beholden to Vince that he really took a chance with me, and I knew he fought for me, which kind of sounds funny because it was his company. He could have done whatever he wanted, but he had advisors like any other company. And I think he really stuck his neck out a little bit for me to keep me involved.
Yeah.
So I didn't really have that, you know, I want to go to Atlanta. I didn't want to, there was really nothing. There's stuff going on there now, acting wise, but there wasn't in those days.
No, absolutely. Well, talking about that as well, you know, your son's definitely a chip off the old block. He appeared on WWE television not too long ago. I didn't know. And then I think someone must have looked into it. And then my mind was, there's a picture of you, I think, both sat on steps dressed as Jameson.
Yes.
Which I love. So how did that come about? Was it, did you get to reunite with Vince, et cetera? Or?
You know, it's such a funny story. Like, everybody, the wrestling fans that have gotten to know me over the last 6 or 7 years since Facebook, all thought that I got James, my son, the gig at WWF through my connections. But I totally didn't. That was totally WWE called his agency, the agency my son is signed with, which happens to be one of the bigger, better talent agencies in New York City. And said, send us your best 8 to 10 year old boy for a pay per view event we're doing in New Jersey Sunday night. And so, you know, they called me right away. They were like, John, they want James will kill this. You know, he's the kid. And we
did they know your background as well?
No, they didn't know. They didn't recognize the name. They didn't know casting. You know, they put casting is in charge of getting the outside talent.
Yeah.
So the funniest thing was, I really didn't want to do it because I figured it was just going to be a promo or something. We had to fly to L.A. The next morning, that Monday morning.
Oh, really? Wow. Did you have to just drop plans, et cetera, and...
You know, it was a Sunday. I think we got the call on Friday. Mm-hmm. We were planned to go to L.A. Sunday morning. James had a big commercial campaign to do for Amazon and It was big money, and we were really excited. It was first class air, and you know, it was really, I was really psyched. But it was an early morning flight, and these pay per view events, you know, they go sometimes till. I knew it was going to be, we weren't going to get out of there till midnight.
Yeah.
That Sunday night. And I was like, yeah, you know, it's not worth it. It was non-union. He hadn't joined the union yet. And it only paid $500. And I'm like, you know, but he would have been, you know, I knew what it would mean to him to go meet all these wrestlers and all that. So I agreed to do it. So we go there and I'm thinking it's going to be this promo and we find out that it's going to be the featured match, the steel cage match between Cena and the, excuse me, and the Wyatt Brothers. I should whip out my inhaler now. Or my,
yeah,
the things that used to pull out.
Yeah, the first actual death on a podcast is just about to happen, I think. Yeah. Are you fine? Have you got...
So I'm actually getting ready for the Yankee game. That's why I started... So they explained to us what he's doing, and I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm like, oh my God, this kid's stepping out.
Yeah.
20,000 fans, screaming fans. I hope he doesn't get intimidated or get or lock up and everything. So all of a sudden, Vince comes over, and he goes and he kneels down in front of James, and he shakes him, he says, "Hi, James. I'm Vince McMahon." So they explain to you what you're going to be doing. He's like, yeah. And he looks up at me because he's kneeling down. He goes, "I guess you're his dad." And I said, "Yeah, Vince, do you recognize me?" And he goes, "Wow, you look familiar." So I made the Jameson face. I went, you know, like, like that. And he's like, "Oh, my God." He almost fell down. He hugged me. And he, "Oh, my God, I can't believe this is your boy." And what a lot of people don't know about James is he did one of the most famous commercials that the NFL, National Football League, has ever done.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was 5 years ago, and it was with a guy by the name of Cam Newton. Mm. And for Play 60, NFL Play 60, and it's the funniest commercial. The commercial won awards, and he – you know, you guys out there listening, watching, Google or YouTube, Cam Newton Play 60. It's the funniest freaking commercial ever. It won awards, like I said. I mean, it was – and it played – every football fan in America has seen that commercial multiple times because for 2 years you saw it every game.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it was really fun to get back there to see Vince and – and, like, I saw guys that I haven't seen in years, like Mike Rotundo, who was IRS back in the day, and who's, you know, Bray Wyatt's dad. And the funniest thing was that commercial was still pretty hot from the NFL. Uh-huh. So all the – it was making its way around the green room and the dressing rooms that, hey, the kid from that NFL commercial is here. Mm-hmm. He's going to be doing – playing Wyatt's kid in this – in the bit, and they were coming up to him and asking if they could take pictures with him. The Bella twins were all over him, and I have all these pictures, and I don't know where the F they are. I lost my phone, so I never got them transferred, but I had some printed, but him with John Cena and just like priceless photos that I no longer have. But it was great that they embraced him because he's the – they call him the Cam Newton kid.
Hmm. Wow. See, that's the thing, being from the UK. I guess, appreciate the impact or the career that is just completely taking off from him. It's,
he's on the top-rated Disney show too, Disney Channel show. So every kid in America or, you know, most – I mean, as even though I got 1,000 Facebook hits – I mean, this kid—it's literally millions. Like if we go to the beach or we go to a, you know, anywhere in public, that there are kids that are there, he gets mobbed. He's like a true child star in the States, but recognized by kids because of the Disney show. He hasn't yet really. He's only been recognized a couple times from the Kevin Can Wait show.
And I've got to say as well, just from speaking to him before, so grounded and, you know, just mature, yeah, and level-headed for his age, and you know, he seems, yeah, to be taking everything in his stride, and obviously he's getting good advice from you, and you know.
In his short career, his resume blows mine away. I mean, it's amazing the earning power this kid has and what they're paying him and all this stuff. And he's still, the thing I'm most proud about is he's a great kid, and it's not, he doesn't brag about what he's doing. He doesn't even want to bring it up to other kids. He wants kids to like him for him, yeah, and not because he's on TV. And I'm just really proud of the kid that he is. And I got a great daughter too, who's not an actor, but I got great kids. I got lucky.
That's awesome. You know, it's great that there is a happy I know wrestling was relatively a small part of your life, but when you, I don't want to go into it, but like sort of when you see what has happened to a lot of your friends from the time as well, but you know, to see such a, you know, a happy,
it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, absolutely. It's heartbreaking.
I go to these, I've done a few of these shows. I can't do as many as I would because I'm so busy with my son, but
yeah,
it's freaking heartbreaking to see what some of these guys, you know, it's just, it's, it tears you up because they were, you know, way up here and what they've had to resort to survive.
Yeah. No, absolutely. But when you've done that, we will wrap up as well because you've given me more of your time.
Yeah, yeah. I looked at the timer.
And you do have a game to watch as well, which is really important. So when you've done these conventions, have you been surprised at just how much the fans have
oh my God,
remembered? Crazy. And, you know, yeah.
Crazy. Quoting me and the pictures they have. One very attractive lady who was younger than me.
Uh-huh.
Well, obviously, she was a kid when I was Jameson, so she's much younger than me. But she was sitting behind me when I was the plant at the...
Oh, wow.
When Beverly Brothers pulled me out of the audience.
Uh-huh.
They tried to pull me out, and the fans wouldn't let me go, and my jacket got torn. She brought a piece of my jacket for me to sign to one of these shows. It was just, like, very humbling.
That's incredible. I'm thinking as well, you know, because you were around during the whole Ico Pro promotion, considering that you were ripped underneath that, you know, suit, you could have been a great before and after for Ico Pro.
I was after them. I was after them to do that, like...
Oh, really?
Like, I said to them, you know what you should do is after the Royal Rumble, let me and Lanny go at it one-on-one.
Oh, I'm telling and you, like, during that time, and, around house shows, that would have
killed. Oh, my God. And you know what? Yeah. That's why I shot Jameson going to the gym as a test for them. It's hilarious. You got to see it.
Awesome.
And that training to fight Lanny Poffo, the genius. And then come to the match, and I fucking come out and like, look at Jameson, holy shit, and shit out of Lanny.
That would have been the greatest thing ever. Okay, well, look, I am gonna let you go. Where can people find you? You are on Facebook. You're probably gonna run out of the amount of friends that you can, you know.
No, can't you have like 5,000 or something?
I think you can have 5,000, but you know, it's,
yeah, I don't even have 1,000.
Yeah, but it's been a week, hasn't it? And look how much it's built up already. Yeah,
I know, but you know, I only confirm the people that have at least two or three or more, two or more mutual friends, because otherwise you get a lot of hookers.
Yeah, I do as well. None of them are real, so, and yeah.
And a lot of foreigners that have no mutual friends with me. I'm afraid to. I don't want to get like talked into ISIS or something, you know.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, Jameson, the face of ISIS, would be interesting.
Yeah, oh my God, that would be funny. There you go.
But people can find you on Facebook, and if you're fine with it, I will post a link under the show. And if you have any footage online,
you know,
any non Jameson stuff, please send it to me, and I will post it on the page because I would love to see your other roles as well.
Yeah, I got some stuff. I should probably get some of that stuff up there. It's so funny because I never really looked at – I almost did Facebook because I got talked because people said you owe it to the fans to have a page. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, every once in a while I post it. I post more shit about my kids than anything else. But I probably should, if there's a, you know, if there's an interest, I should post some stuff because I got some funny stuff that has never been seen.
Oh, well, I'm very, very excited to see it. Well, look, thank you, John, for being
thank
part
you.
Of the show. You know, it goes, like I say, doing this show, I've been able to talk to heroes, not just in wrestling, but in music and film and stuff like that. So it's mind-blowing for me as a fan that you've given me an hour of your time.
Yeah. And, you're too kind. And you're a great interviewer.
Yay. That's good to know.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good to know. That's going to go at the start of the show on repeat.
This would be very easy for me to say yes to people if they were all like you.
Okay, well, that's good to know. That's good to know. Well, look, thank you for being on the show, and I'm hoping we can do this again at some point if Vivian gets back in touch.
People could also go on James's Facebook page. It's James Anthony DiGiacomo, and you'll see somebody a hell of a lot more talented than me. He's got some great tape.
True, maybe, but there is only one Jameson.
That's true.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, man. Take care.
Goodbye.